but I think we are old enough and probably very important by this time. Yes?
I just wanted to say your next birthday somebody should give you a tom-tom.
A what?
A tom-tom, a GPS.
Don't worry, we did come to the birthday. We're going to speak about birthday. We started this week with presentations from the department. Of course, you are busy with annual reports. On Tuesday, we had the Department of Basic Education, and we were satisfied with what they told us. On Wednesday, we had Puma Lucy. That was very interesting. And they were very good. And I hope today the presentation of ELRC will be the same. What I want to say was that in the welcoming remarks, we have two birthdays here today. The one is our research office committee, that's the smartest sitting at the back. And the other one is one of the members, Uncle Shwana, but I don't know whether she's around. I'm here to see her for the day. And I'd like to announce we've got the number of October babies because on Tuesday was the DG of the Education Department. Today it's two other people that serve in the committee. And then the big announcement, and tomorrow is my run. Are you listening? And James, are you listening? Tomorrow is my run. So I'm expecting the GPS from the committee themselves. The chairperson is here, so
you are. Well, I didn't see you, so that's why I'm asking.
So, and don't give a clap in hands for me because tomorrow's my birthday. Yes. And today it's the Honourable Mushwana and then the Mr. Mahada's birthday. And I just told them there were many important people that were born in October.
Wow.
Yes. Yes, I know the rip is in October, she was still cut out. No, she's in October, but she's in a different star sign. It's still coming. You know, you people put me off. I'm just waiting for the word to say. When it comes to the work that we are going to do today, the annual report, Llewellyn, if you hear, will give the apologies and you'll just note it. After the apologies are given, we're going to ask first for introductions. And then after the introduction, then we'll go over to the report. And we are going to allow you, it's a long report, to give this presentation, because I think it's a lot of work we did. And after that, we'll question you. Thank you. Llewellyn, any apologies?
Yes, thank you, Chair. Apologies from Honourable Tikobo, as well as Mpushani, and Honourable Sposana, who's here to try and join us a bit later, because they're all taken up with other committees.
Thank you. That is noted. Any apologies from ELRC? And even if you could go upon it, I'd like to say we need to have it in writing.
The luncheon.
And then I speak, leading the delegation, because we need to have a department on co-official presence. We do have it. I expect to see you. The silence.
Yes, Chief, I think you're correct. I am here today for the department leading the delegation.
Fine, thank you. We're going to have introductions, and we'll start with the members of Parliament, and from there we'll go to the officials, our officials in Parliament. Then we're going to start with the Education Department, and that includes the liaison officer that have to also say who he is. And from there we go to ELRC, and then in ELRC to say who's leading the delegation, that I know exactly, and then after that, we have one visitor, as Dr. Pissus in there. I'll just give his name first, thank you. We started on the dinner.
She's got it wrong, it's not Dr. Pissus.
Afternoon, Chair, thank you. I'm Nomalu Nerokeva, the member of the board. Sherilyn Dudley, member of the committee.
I'm William Adisha, sitting on the committee.
I'm Silence Makubela, a member of the committee.
Mashishi Ace, a member of the committee.
Good afternoon, Donald Smurz, member of the committee.
Llewellyn Brown, committee secretary for basic education.
Good afternoon, I'm Dennis Bandy, content advisor of the committee.
Good afternoon, everyone. The research for the committee. Thank you.
Good afternoon. I'm Simone Gaya from the Department of Basic Education.
Good afternoon. Nivekas Maruleka, DPE.
Randall van den Meer,
the parliamentary is an officer of the minister.
Good afternoon, I'm Brian Chiazzi, ELRC Executive Manager of the CTA.
Zahir Gawadze, General Secretary and Accounting Officer of the Education and Labour Relations Council.
Cindy Fort, Senior Manager, Collective Bargaining Services.
Jeff Mushaha, the Chief Financial Officer of the Education and Labour Relations Council.
I'm Dr. Sukavadze, the Chairperson of the ELRC.
Grace Neva, Provincial Manager, Collective Bargaining Services in the Western Cape.
Thanks a lot for that. And I think you're like Jessa, you know, who's going to start first. Unless the department has something to say, just introductory remarks or something.
We will allow the ELRC to do the presentation. And if there's anything that you would like to ask us to clarify in relation to that, we are also available to
you. Thanks a lot for that. You may start, sir.
Thank you. May I introduce?
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm from the PMG. My name's Ariana Roberry. I'll be monitoring.
To start up our presentation, I will ask our chairperson to say a few words, Ms. Dorcas Zekabati.
Thanks a lot. You may start, Matt.
Thank you, Chair. Greetings, honorable members of parliament. It is with great privilege and honor to support the presentation of the ELRC annual report for the 2010-2011 financial report. Our collective presence here today signifies the importance we all place on education. As our annual report simplifies, our primary concern remains the land, and all our efforts are geared towards the realization of a quality public education sector. This added commitment to the education of our children stems from our belief that a world-class education system can allow learners from any background to achieve their potential, and in doing so to improve their lives, the lives of their families, their communities, their country, and the world. I would then like to hand over to the accounting officer of the ELRC, Mr. Govender, to present the council's annual report. Thank you.
Thanks a lot for that, ma'am. I'm hearing, you know, like people speaking somewhere. I think it does so. Whoever speaking, it does respect whoever speaking, making a presentation. You may continue, sir.
Honorable Chairperson and members of the Basic Education Portfolio Committee,
It is indeed a privilege and honor for the ELRC to present its annual report and to account to you for its performance. As our president, the Honorable Zuma, said in 2009, education will be a key priority for the next 5 years. We want our teachers, learners, and parents to work together with government to turn our schools into thriving centers of excellence. In presenting this report, I will be ably assisted by my Chief Financial Officer, Mr. Jeff Mushaga, who will cover the finance and compliance part. I have the Senior Manager for Collective Bargaining, Ms. Nolosindiso Foka, who will make the presentation on Collective Bargaining. I also have Dr. Brian Sherzi, on my right, who will assist us in presenting our project on HIV/AIDS intervention in public education for teachers. May I begin in terms of presentation?
I think that was a background music. But you try and make it sound.
Thank you. To all the patriots that are present, in presenting this report, I want to start with a quotation. To the provision of quality education, we carve an interminable stamp of calculated triumph on the slate of our children's dream. These are words written by our media officer in the ELRC itself. It lays the basis on how we position ourselves as the ELRC. We are an organization currently going through significant change in terms of repositioning the ELRC, in terms of ensuring we play our role in ensuring this quality public education for all. Our mandate derives from the Constitution of the Republic itself, various legislation and applicable laws, regulations, and even international conventions that guide us in our work. To summarize from the Constitution, Section 23, Section 28(2), and the right to basic education in Section 29(1). Our mandate is equally derived primarily as a bargaining council from the Labour Relations Act. And to give effect to that, we have crafted a constitution for the ELRC that gives its rules and the manner in which it will deliver its services. Of importance in that is our voluntary compliance with the Public Finance Management Act. Equally, the mandate will be derived from the Further Education and Training Colleges Act, number 16 of 2006, and the amendments that may be derived thereafter. The Employment of Educators Act and collective agreements set out the tasks and challenges. As I indicated to you, we are an organization in a state of transition, moving from being a traditional bargaining council to a public entity that is going to be responsive to the needs and challenges in public education. And our new vision is to improve the quality of teaching and learning through labor peace. And throughout our presentation, we'll show you our endeavors in that regard. Our vision and motto is to provide quality services for excellence in teaching. We have redesigned the organizational values that we want to adopt. The first being professionalism. Teaching is not a job. It is a vocation and a calling for professionals whom we call teachers. And being a teacher myself and serving teachers, professionalism is the highest on our agenda. And the challenge we have
of ensuring professionalism takes root once again in the teaching. Transparency is our commitment to abiding by and complying with the Public Finance Management Act. Independence is to offer services independent of both the trade unions and the department where such independence is imperative. We've built in our sense of accountability both to you, ultimately to you as members of parliament on behalf of the South African public, but also to the educators from whom we primarily derive our funds and offer our services. As a bargaining council, we have to ensure there's fairness and equity in the procedures and processes that we manage. Equally, being an organization operating public education, we have to have a sense of social responsibility, and to that extent, our participation and driving or project managing the quality teaching and learning campaign, the teacher development issues, the teacher laptop initiative, and more importantly, our PCTA, HIV/AIDS intervention program, fits within that commitment to social responsibility. Efficiency is utilizing the resources we have in the most cost-effective manner and ensuring that there is value for money. When our CFO takes you through that part of our report, you'll see that we are a fairly frugal organization in the manner in which we utilize funds. At the outset, from the goals and objectives we set for ourselves, we can say, overall, for the period under review, we fulfilled our mandate to improve the quality of learning and teaching through labor peace in public education. For the period under review, in terms of the operations of our council, we've had no significant disruption at a national level. The last strike formally arising out of the ERC was in 1997. We have contributed towards the finalization of the Integrated Strategic Plan Framework for Teacher Development, and that was finally published this year. Equally, we have contributed to ensuring that in the further education and training colleges sector, a collective agreement was concluded to establish parity of conditions of service and salaries within the FET colleges between lecturers employed by the colleges themselves and those that were employed by the state previously. Equally, we had commissioned a major research into the investigation of the appropriateness of the current salary structure in public education and to propose the development of a revised salary model. We have reports on your table, honorable members. It's the PRIM report. At the same time, our HIV/AIDS project had, and we'll present in that report, delivered remarkable success of our intervention. I have covered the legislation, so I am going to skip these few slides in terms of all the applicable legislation. Safe to say that through the amendment of education laws, there may be further obligations for the ELRC. For the period under review, to our knowledge at the time of writing this report, there was no litigation against the council, nor had we engaged in any litigation, except for our arbitration awards being taken on review, which is not necessarily directed in a negative way against the council. It's more the recourse individuals will seek against awards that may have been made against them. The primary purpose of our business is to promote labor peace in public education to ensure that there is effective or quality teaching and learning taking place. And that we do through ensuring that grievances and disputes of teachers are resolved and does not give rise to anger and work stoppages. Equally, we facilitate discussions and engagements which we call collective bargaining between the state as an employer and the educator trade unions. In an organization that is transitioning, we may want to talk about partnerships and collaboration for quality public education. No cause is more noble than the steadfastness of a collective to invest in the soul of the nation's lifeblood, the education of its children. I've now come to the performance report. Dispute resolution services. This is where, in colloquial terms, we are the CCMA for teachers. Here we primarily provide conciliations and arbitration to resolve individual disputes, given that there's been no collective dispute that we had dealt with in the last financial year. We are going to show you the disputes over the years. Brian, if you can speed that up. What you will see is that overall the number of disputes that we're having in public education is dropping. To the period under review, there were 531. However, the warning signs, and I just put this, for the year to date, for the first 6 months, we've already had almost 400. If that picks up, it may be that we'll have an increased dispute for the current financial year. But our target is to ensure that formal disputes is reduced to about 400 over time. In terms of the different categories of disputes that we are getting, unlike the CCMA, where almost 95% of all disputes relate to dismissals, in the public service, whether it is in education, police, nursing, or general public service, the highest number of disputes generally relate to promotions and appointments. But unlike other bargaining councils in the public service, our disputes related to promotions have been dropping over time. But by the year 2000, almost 70% of our disputes related to promotions and appointments. You will see that it is almost stable at about 44-45%. Dismissal disputes, which was about 10% in the year 2000, is around 30% now. We have other unfair labor practices that may relate to payment of salaries, etc., especially to temporary educators. The interpretation of provisions of regulations or collective agreements, there was none in the last financial year. Okay? And in terms of mutual interest, you will realize that we have no mutual interest dispute that led to any disruption. If we look at by province, okay, let me move on to the next one. Let's do that. Of significance, I invite you to go to that, is that the Western Cape has become the province since 1999, when it last occupied the number one spot as the province with the most number of disputes. The Western Cape is now getting March 2011, the province once again the highest number of disputes. So that will warrant a special intervention from the side of the ERC to look at what factors are giving rise to the increased number of disputes specifically in that province. But one area of disputes relates to medical boarding of educators. It seems to be a phenomenon that is higher in the Western Cape than in other provinces. You will then realize that KwaZulu-Natal, which used to be the province for the last 12 years, the highest number of disputes are disputes. So overall, we look at, except for in most provinces, except for Mpumalanga, there is a decrease in the number of disputes in all provinces. So that means...
Yeah.
Okay.
overall to be looking at a trend where perhaps grievances of educators are being adequately addressed by provincial departments. And there's greater cooperation between the trade unions and the departments in the resolution of large number of grievances. We are unable at this point to tell you about the number, but the next time we come here, we will be able to tell you of the thousands of grievances that have been addressed by province. If we move through, I've already dealt with that slide, right? The aging analysis, to look at cases and from how far they come back. You'll realize from the year 2005-06, we have no cases that are being handled. From the year 2006-2007, we got 2, 4, by the financial year 2008-09, 3, then 9-10, we've got 10 cases that are still on our books being addressed. 10-11, which we would expect, especially for the last 4 or 5 months, those cases will always flow into the next financial year. Okay. So that overlap. The importance of showing you this analysis is that we now need to measure and try to eliminate having cases from more than 2 financial years back.
The spelling problem, analysis is a Y.
Yes. We apologize.
Sir,
next slide will deal with the aging of the analysis. Also looking at cases that have been referred to us by the labor court that we are dealing with, and these are the cases that we have been paid for those years. Importance is, even though the case was referred back to us by the labor court, one was settled for the year 2007, for the year 9-10, one was withdrawn. That means effectively we have left to delta 90. Move through. We are measuring, in order to improve our operations and ensure cases don't last as long as we have shown you in the previous slides, is that conciliation by law and by operation must occur within the 30-day period. We've set a target overall for arbitrations to be disposed of within 6 months, so that we do not have cases that are 3-4 years old still on our books. I think we are engaging with our parties about arbitrations and trying to expedite arbitrations, but the one phenomenon is when lawyers enter, they have no regard for issues of pleasure, they would take their time, especially in promotions and appointment disputes. We need this matter to be finalized so that a school can have the management that that's required. We may have to, in proposals, look at putting a curb on the number of days and the period within which a dispute must be heard. That is within our competence to deal with in our constitution. We also do report to you on cases concerning the abuse of our learners. To this extent, 14 of the 157 dismissal disputes referred to the LRC, 14 related to the abuse of learners. These have been published on our website, and members would be given electronic versions. They will be emailed to the secretary of the committee, so you may have sight of them. We have recognized that protecting the rights of the child is equally as important to us as providing fairness and equity to teachers. All of us who are involved are obliged by our own constitution and various international conventions to do so. And so we have embarked on a child-centered approach of ensuring that our panelists, our parties, be they the trade unions or the department, are kept abreast of the development of law concerning the child. And many workshops have been committed. We will be strengthening our interventions in this regard. In the period under review, we've had 40 cases, but for the 6 months to date, we can report there have been 6 cases that have been delivered to us. There's one case from 2009 that has been scheduled as a due hearing in 2011. This is where we have made suggestions and proposals in the past that we should try and avoid having too many hearings, where the employer or the state or the department would conduct an investigation and then prosecute, in this case in 2009, and then this individual may have appeals to the MEC. And finally, it is then when the appeal is turned down, is referred to us now as a dispute. So that's almost 3 years that has expired. And that needs to be resolved in a final sense by minimizing the hearings as we proposed to the department, say, of the ERRC 2-1 that takes place and that binds the department, say, of the ERRC to the outcome of that hearing, so that it does not drag on. Of the 14 that have been referred, 9 were finalized in the period under review and 5 were spilled over into the final. From the previous financial year, there have been 12 referrals, of which 6 are still on our books. That means it's still taking 2 financial years for that matter to be heard. And our imperative is that any hearing concerning the child should be disposed of within a 6-month period. So that's work that we still have to do in jacking up the system. Facilitation. The ERRC has gone beyond traditional dispute resolution. We've now moved into the area where facilitation is going to be important in minimizing disruptions in public education in a proactive manner, so that there's a high degree of stability. Parents themselves can disrupt schooling in schools. There's a discontent between members of the governing body and teachers, and that occurs in many cases. So facilitation is our attempt to make an intervention. There is no baseline or past experience, so it's a new area that we are venturing into. For the year under review, the Eastern Cape Provincial Department of Education had a problem in which there were many educators whom communities had, to put it in simple terms, kicked out of their schools for a variety of reasons. These educators were then languishing either in district offices or in post in other schools. And that is what we will call double parking and cost the provincial department money. So we intervened, and there are 143 cases referred to us. We have successfully got 94 of those educators placed permanently in schools by negotiating with governing bodies. This facilitation required us to have a new category of people assisting us called community facilitators. People with special skills who are able to engage communities and diffuse tensions and are able to solve problems that a traditional arbitrator or court cannot do. And that's through engagement. I go back to the slide. Obviously, in such a case, the 94 that we resolve is a high number, way beyond any expectation we would have had. 40 still remain, 40 were unresolved. That means we were unable to place them in available posts, as governing bodies were not willing to accept them. 8 cases are still pending, and you realize one is still waiting an appeal outcome to the NEC, which complicates the resolution to that. But that was our first major intervention of trying to assist provincial departments that have such kind of problems. I can tell you I've been to quite a few parts of the Eastern Cape, spoken to parents who were the key people that we had to influence, and that work is a new area. There's no right and wrong. We are not there to judge people on action, but rather to try and negotiate a solution. As part of dispute prevention, we've had educators in the adult basic education centers, and they were having grievances and disputes, and we had to negotiate. They are not formally part of our council, but if we did not intervene, it could have led to disruption in education. And so the fact that they're not a party to the council does not mean we can't intervene and try and diffuse potential labor unrest. So that's our intervention in that thing. As I indicate to you, that given that there's changing law and the law around children is quite important, professional development and training is an important part and intervention of our dispute management services. To this extent, professional development is an exercise we generally conduct with our panelists, some of whom are advocates, some of whom are lawyers, but it is incumbent on us as the ELRC to inform them of the new imperatives of the quality of teaching and learning campaign, as well as a focus on protecting the rights of the child, and especially children who have been abused. So we've engaged in a number of professional development exercises. We equally engage in training of trade union representatives and departmental officials to keep them abreast of the latest law and development. And to that extent, we have formal programs in which we encourage and facilitate trade union representatives and department officials to participate. I will now hand over to Ms. Melissa Sofoka, the Senior Manager for Collective Bargaining, to take over.
Thank you, Collective Bargaining Services is provided both at national to council and also to 9 provincial chambers. I'll start with national. I think the accounting officer earlier on in his preamble alluded to the ELRC's involvement and contribution towards teacher development processes. But with the one projected on the screen relates specifically to the summit declaration itself, wherein all stakeholders involved in education agreed that the IQMS needed to be streamlined so as to allow a process where delinking can be put in place, where the ELRC was given the responsibility to discharge of such. In that regard, Chairperson, I can report that parties concluded a collective agreement which necessitated that they engage in the processes of working towards revising or streamlining the IQMS. And as such, we can safely report that currently our parties are working very hard to finalize the long-awaited revised performance management system for educators, both office-based and institution-based. That is, Chairperson, to be specific in the language that you are all familiar with, is the performance agreement for principals and deputy principals. We've seen that that is a very high area of interest from the media. So we need to safely report today, Chairperson, that our parties have set aside a management plan, which is the deadline for this financial year to conclude on the matters around the education management services, which does not only relate to the performance agreement itself, but also the system, the performance management system itself. Chair, if I can skip from that one, the accounting officer has already touched on the research which was commissioned by the ELRC, which also was concluded at national. So I'm not going to give details of such, except to say or repeat that the copies were circulated and the findings are summarized on slide 53 of the presentation, which is more towards the end on the special project, on the research report. Chair, as I've indicated earlier on, that collective bargaining services relate to both national and provincial. One of the responsibilities of national in the council is to ratify collective agreements that are concluded in our provincial chambers. So the slide will show that we had one collective agreement that was concluded at the provincial level, which is Mpumalanga. We also, council also ratified a collective agreement in relation to further education and training colleges sector, which the general secretary also covered in his preamble. Then, Chair, we will move to provincial collective bargaining. Chair, we need to preface this presentation for provincial collective bargaining services to say that council has indeed been concerned about the performance of our provincial chambers in terms of the achievement against the predetermined objectives. And as such, we can report today, Chair, that our executive committee then took a decision to standardize the predetermined objectives of all 9 provincial chambers, and allowing a situation where provincial chambers feel that if from the standardized objectives there are issues that are not covered, then they would be allowed to add such. And this, Chair, was in the main done with the purpose of trying to improve the performance of the provincial chambers. In that regard, Chairperson, the executive committee standardized the objectives, mainly streamlining the operations of the chambers to focus on providing a forum for consultations and information sharing. And in terms of consultations, what we provide services for is consultations on the post provisioning, which talks to the staffing of the schools. Then in terms of information sharing, Chair, we provide information sharing wherein the employer would come and share reports in terms of programs like your skills development, the employee wellness programs, the teacher development programs. The main reason that we provide such forums is that we do take cognizance of the fact that some of these matters are dealt with outside the ambit of the ELRC, like your ETDP status and that. But however, we feel that it is in the interest of parties to the ELRC that formal reports flowing from such engagements outside the chamber are presented in our provincial chamber. I think that, Chairperson, the last issue that you need to touch on in relation to the provincial chambers, as I said, that one of the concerns is the dysfunctionality of some of our chambers, but that too, the general secretary will be covering under facilitation, under the executive services presentation. Here, we just want to highlight that we had a case for one province, which is KZN, wherein we were reporting that in terms of the predetermined objectives, the chamber was dysfunctional owing to the fact that there was impasse between parties. However, the ELRC discharged their mandate in facilitating that engagements do take place, though not necessarily within the ELRC, but the ELRC provided services in the task team that was working towards achieving that which was appearing on our predetermined objectives. And the task team was led by the MEC for Education in KZN with the assistance of the General Secretary. I thank you, Chairperson.
The ELRC also provides shop stewards to assist in dispute prevention, in public education. For the period under review, we have provided shop stewards who generally participate, so they feed out of schools so that they have substitutes appointed in their place so that we do not disrupt the teaching and learning process. These shop stewards' primary responsibilities are to represent the union but work with the provincial departments to ensure grievances and disputes are speedily resolved, as well as to assist in special projects that they may have running from time to time. They are the negotiators of the trade unions in the provincial and national chambers. Okay. So for the period under review, we have provided overall 99 Although provision is for 120, but 99 were provided, 68, and the distribution is on the vote way, and that's how it's allocated throughout the country in terms of provision. The achievement in this regard is the shop steward's work covered, as I indicated, disciplinary and dispute resolution hearing, negotiations and consultations. Many are equally involved as either master trainers in our HIV/AIDS intervention programs. They also assist in communication in trade union related matters, also to look at whether there is compliance by the departments in respect of implementation of collective agreements. And now cover executive services. This is managed directly under the office of the General Secretary and the accounting officer. The first is management intervention and facilitation. Right. Teacher development, from the cover teacher development, the quality teaching and learning campaign, the teacher laptop initiative, as well as our prevention care treatment access project, which is an HIV intervention program. Equally, we'll deal with facilitation in the Eastern Cape, and I've given some indication in that regard. We'll also deal with fraud and risk management, our fraud prevention plan, our compliance with the PFMA and Treasury regulations, information technology, etc. Health and safety. In respect of mobilizing our employees, that's our human resource management, for the period under review, we are in short. That the ERRC is an organization that ensures adequate training and development of its staff. As an organization, we encourage learning, and hopefully that learning will translate into better services for our staff. So, a significant number of our staff have been put through those programs. We move on. 16 employees studied, one employee graduates to the LLD qualification, and those skills are required and utilized by us. Others have a qualification in labor relations, public relations, and administration. 6 employees completed their first year of study for the period under review. In terms of research and development, we indicated to you earlier, and we have provided a copy of our research report. And this report sheds clarity on the appropriateness of the entry salary for educators and provides recommendations on how the teaching profession can enhance its capacity through a standardized salary structure and complement the prominence of teaching as a profession. The major finding
the major findings are summarized on the screen. What is very clear on the research itself is that the principles that were adopted in collective agreement number 1 and 2 of 2008. In fact, the researchers have found that those principles there are still very much appropriate. Therefore, parties need to go for part, members of the committee will recall that 1 and 2 of 2008 was just but a framework for the establishment of 2008. However, there were principles that were adopted there. So that finding that is currently projected on the screen is just re-emphasizing that the principles are very important and they are very appropriate. Therefore, parties, if they want to revise the salary structure, they need to ask to keep to the same principles there. Chair, on the same breath, whilst they are acknowledging that the principles are appropriate, what is of concern from them in terms of their observation is that while the principles are well and good, but the pace within which educators would be able to progress to the highest salary range can be very slow because of the number of the notches from the lowest level up to the highest level. So the research has proved that perhaps that's one area that needs to be relooked at and which was not necessarily implemented.
I'll hand over to the accounting to the Chief Financial Officer.
Thank you, Chair.
Honourable members, let me start by indicating on my financial highlights that the funding model of the inflation evaluation is unique in that the income that we account for remains steady over a number of years. And this is mainly because it consists of deductions for educators on the one side and a 50% equal amount from the employer. Now, the challenge that we face is that when the income does not increase, as we all know, expenditure will increase on a yearly basis. And the only way that we can increase income is through a levy increase. And a levy increase, again, is an outcome of a process of negotiation. That should be negotiated between the parties so that an increase can be effective. So the last time we had an increase was in 2007 in terms of the levies. So over the years, we haven't had any levy increase. The challenge that we are facing is to ensure that we become more cost effective in terms of ensuring that any surpluses that we may incur in the earlier years when you get an increase, you reserve them for those years that will have to be supplemented from the reserves when the expenditure start exceeding the income that comes in every year. Now, if you look at the slide, we have indicated that the levies that we received in 2011 compared to the levies that we received in 2010, there was a slight increase of just below 1%. And that is basically made up of the contributors, 411,850 for 2011 and 409,829 for 2010. The increase in terms of the contributors and the amount involved is more or less the same. Now, I've indicated the financial highlights in terms of the funding of the operations. The total income is indicated here on is 49 million, but then you can realize that total expenditure started now catching up with us. Now, total expenditure was more than what we received for that financial year, and then we ended up with a deficit, operational deficit of 813,000. But then we do have investment, and we do get interest income from that. And then we have supplemented our income for the 2010-2011 financial year with interest income. And we ended up with a surplus of 3.5 million. So that's really how we year by year try to manage and supplement the income as much as we can. Now the next slide will indicate the financial performance in terms of allocation of funds to the different problems which have narratively been covered earlier on by my colleagues. In terms of dispute resolution services, 11% of the total budget or funding went to them. And training and development, which includes professional development, 1.5 million, which is 3% of the total budget. So together, basically, if you look at dispute resolution and training and development, which mostly relates so the training of dispute resolution practitioners, professional development of dispute resolution practitioners and panelists basically forms the allocation of funding to dispute resolution management, which in total would say is 14% of the budget. Now, the major one there, 23%, is also allocated to a program indicated earlier on the narratives, which is for dispute prevention support services. In simple terms, is the funding of the food sanctuary stewards, which also is in terms of an agreement reached in council between the two parties on the funding of that project. And then the next one would be collective bargaining services, which if you look at it at that level, you might think is too low to be allocated that funding, especially when it was indicated that it's both for national and also the operations of the provinces. However, what we haven't included in terms of the operations of the collective bargaining is the infrastructure that is provided in the provinces. We have taken them out and put them into the supporting services for the corporate services section. And then governance basically is 2%, which relates to the governance structures of the council, which would be the executive committee, the finance committee, legal committees and other, including the audit committee. So that's the funding that we allocated to them. And then research, I think they've touched on it as a program. It took 3% of the total budget. And then the project, I think they were also covered under the narrative presentation, the TLI, QLTC, Quality Learning and Teaching Campaign, Teacher Laptop Initiative, and also the teacher development. So those were the three projects where 7% of the total budget was allocated. Support services basically is in support of all the programs which are more involved in the delivery of the service. Now we have also shown the cost of the staff, which I think in our previous presentation last year we were requested to show that separate. That is, we have taken the cost of staff from all the programs, whether they are in operations or in support services, we have taken them out, and they indicate that 29% of our budget is allocated to remuneration of staff, which I think in terms of the norm, we are still way below what other organizations and entities really spend in terms of the percentage of the total budget in terms of staff cost. When we go to the next slide, we are indicating basically expanding as requested on the trend in terms of personnel information. And I think in this case I need to indicate this more on the senior management remuneration as shown and disclosed in the annual report. If you look at the trend, I think starting from 2009, we have given a 3-year actual and a projection for the next 2 years. We realize that the increase has been in line with expectations, and again we need to consider that we started at a low base, and therefore the increase from year to year will tend to be above inflation. For instance, if you look at the increase between 2009 and 2010, there was a 38% increase in that year. And then from 2010 to 11, there's been a 17.5% increase. And if you look at the projections of what we say is going to happen from the 2011-2012 financial year, we have indicated a 9% increase, which is more or less in line with what you would expect from the inflation rate as it's going. And going further from 12-13, we have indicated an increase of 8%. So if we go to the next slide in terms of revenue, I think we're also now showing the trend in terms of our indicated earlier on the fluctuation in terms of revenue. If you look at 2007, we started from a base of 40 million. And I think that's when, in 2007, there was a levy increase which was negotiated between the
2007-2008, we had a big jump from 40 million to 36,792,000. And then the income has been increasing in terms of the increase also of the contributors. But I think now we realize that in 2011 there was that 0.6% increase in terms of the contributors. However, if you look at the previous year, I think there was a distortion in that a larger amount which was transferred into the ERC coming from the transformation fund that we used to launch this inception. Now, the trend also in terms of expenditure, we've looked at it from 2007 also over a five-year period. I think it's in line with the demand from council in terms of the operations that needed to be covered in. If you look at the increase from 2009 to 2010, it's a heavy increase. That's when funding was allocated to the three special projects that we have alluded to in terms of the narrative presentation. And then we have started slowing down from 2010 to 2011, in line also with the surpluses starting to wind down. Now, the trend in terms of our surplus or our deficit, I think you can see we have indicated that we started at a deficit way back in 2007 of just over 7 million. And then after the increase in levies, we started going into a surplus, and those were the surpluses that we have been accumulating over these years, which we have seen already that in the 2010-2011 financial year, we had incurred an operating surplus. Now, for the next MTF period, we would be basically digging into those reserves in order to supplement our income for the next 3 years until hopefully when the negotiations will be concluded in terms of whether we have to get levy increases. However, we are sure at the moment in terms of the health of the council, we are still in a very healthy situation. I think the liquidity indicates clearly in our balance sheet. And for the next 3 years, I think we would be fulfilling the demand in terms of the operations on the council. Now, looking at the future, I think we have a couple of challenges in terms of now the verification of specifically the basic education levies, whereby I think we need to ensure we come up with a process agreed upon between the council and the auditor general in terms of the requirements of satisfying that we do verify and provide evidence in terms of whether are we receiving the levies that we are supposed to or are we not. And I think that's an area that we are engaging the auditor general in order to ensure and also avoid any qualification that might arise out of that. And then also, as I've indicated, we are now going into an area where we need to manage our surplus funds very carefully in terms of future operations, since we have now started to incur operational deficit. And in terms of our budgeting, we have ensured that we need to manage that properly in order to supplement income for the next 3 to 4 years. The other one, I think, is again having to keep current with developments relating to generally recognized accounting practices, which are slowly replacing the generally accepted accounting practices, which are specifically meant for the public sector. And I think there are certain changes that sometimes we might have overlooked, and I think we need to ensure that it's a challenge that we need to keep current, up to date with current developments. And I think effective 2012-2013, a new framework in terms of reporting on the performance information of the council has been introduced by National Treasury, and I think it's going to be a challenge, mainly because it is now going to be compulsory that the information now be audited. And auditing audited, an opinion would be given on the financial statements of the council. Now, the opinion of the Auditor General will now have to include whether we have done in terms of the new framework relating to performance. I think that is more to do with the funding of the operations of the Council for the 2010-2011 financial year. Thank you, Chair. I'll hand back to the accounting officer.
I think if you have the CFO on the 29% of the staff cost as the increase, as management we have taken a proposal as part of the first draft of the ELRC strategic plan and the annual performance plans for the year 2012-13 is to begin to cut the staff size down, number one. Two is look at a process in which where we would try and minimize our staff costs and operational costs in our province. In the first draft, we made that proposal. We will be having a further debate at the governance level in terms of the second draft that is due on the 30th of November. But in that regard, we have taken note of the projected increase and realized that the organization on its current level of income will not be able to sustain its current staff. And therefore, we would be making significant proposals on how to use fewer staff more effectively in delivering services. In terms of projects, I would hand over to Dr. Brian Chersey to take us through one of the biggest projects we run. This project is funded separately and is not included in our income or expenditure that the CFO just dealt with. Dr. Chersey.
Thank you, Chair, and honourable members. And I believe the members need to be remember that this project resulted from the HSRC study that was commissioned by the ELRC in 2005. So, just to share up the numbers, I would like to look at this. What does H in HIV stand for? Not homosexual, not hemophilic, not heightened, not heroin, no hypodermic needle. It stands for human. There is no high-risk group, only high-risk behaviors. Quoted from Alan Bennett. The project has three objectives. The first one being preventing HIV transmission using abstinence and or being faithful methods through safe and healthy sexual behavior in HIV infected and uninfected individuals. To prevent HIV transmission using other prevention methods through safe and healthy sexual behavior in HIV-infected and uninfected individuals. And then the third objective is to prevent HIV transmission through safe and healthy sexual behavior in HIV-infected and uninfected individuals by promoting access to counseling and testing within and through schools and unions as work sites and educator participation. This is in line, these objectives are in line with the government's objectives and interventions. So in year three, our outputs are, so since this model, we are using peer educator system, which is an internationally recognized intervention model that we are using. We use peer educators to deliver HIV interventions. So we have reached educators through unions that we are partnering with. Year three we have five partners, being the SAOU, NATOSA, NATU, and is in Natosa and PEU as well. Sorry, Chair. So the activities that we had, we trained UN members and master trainers and peer educators on HIV prevention, stigma, discrimination, HIV counseling and testing, and treatment awarenesses. So with that, we directed these interventions to the union leadership, because if union leaderships are trained on these matters, they will advocate that interventions take place and interventions reach their real recipients, being educators. And then again, we changed also our model, because we learned that if we are reaching, we are implementing these interventions through educators and we are not penetrating schools, that means we will only be able to reach those educators that are active, I mean, within union structures. Therefore, we had to go and implement these interventions in schools so that we reach all the educators. So, therefore, again, that also necessitated that we also learned that delivering only reaching an educator once, that is not effective. We needed to deliver our interventions using a structured curriculum to make sure that is going to facilitate behavior change. And therefore, that can only be delivered if we are using a school-based kind of an intervention. So we conducted school-based peer education, and then we also reach educators through UN meetings, and we also use UN campaigns to deliver HIV prevention interventions on stigma, discrimination, HIV counseling and treatment. We also distributed male and female condoms at prevention trainings and education sessions and in campaigns as well. So, and then again, we also provided HCT services and at prevention trainings, and also at meetings and children union campaigns. We also trained master trainers and peer educators on HIV counseling and testing. So as a result, we had set ourselves some targets. So for the first activity, our annual target was to reach 3,000 members. So we reached about 1,455, which is 49% our output. Meaning that because now there is why we, there was I mean we, our output is low is because we had changed our model of delivering these interventions. And then again, for activity two, our output was 131%, activity three, 35%, activity four, 51%, and activity five, 166%. How do we deliver this model? And then in 2009 and 10, we have about 1,467 peer educators and 129 master trainers who provided these interventions related to prevention, care, and treatment, and we reached 19,650.
I'm only giving you 15 minutes to complete everything. Also, we still need to ask questions. Thank you.
All right, I'll be fast. Thank you, Chair. Okay, and we also organized activities during public holidays and also during teacher special occasions. And then we had celebrated the PU World Teachers Day and reached quite a number of learners and also educators. And then we also established condom distribution sites. So as part of the process as well, we also distribute information, education, communication materials which we design as the ELRC. The ELRC also participated within the National School HCT Task Team, so which was put on hold. So we have worked very hard to build a relationship with the Department of Basic Education on their employee assistance program. CDC funding has been decreasing over the years. There's about $600,000 reduction in funding from the previous years. Further cuts are expected in year four, as we have been warned by CDC. To supplement year three, we requested CDC to approve our year one carryover, but that request has not yet been approved. Okay, in this financial year, this table reflects our financial expenditure in terms of salaries, in terms of equipment, supplies, and other direct costs. So what appears here also includes money that has been distributed to the union partners that I have listed before. What do we want? What are we planning? Well, we have requested CDC to allow us to redirect year one carryover funds to do additional activities in year five to strengthen our school-based educator system and support the Department of Basic Education to operationalize the draft integrated strategy 2012 to 2016, which calls for sexual and reproductive health education, including HIV, to be mandatory and timetabled as a subject delivered in all South African schools. So if educators are going to be used as the first point of entry, therefore they need to be empowered accordingly. So we also believe that it's very critical that we whatever interventions that we do for the project sustainability, that needs to be in line with what the Department of Basic Education is planning. At the meeting we had recently, there was an agreement that we are not going to duplicate the interventions that the Department of Basic Education in this regard is implementing, but we will do the interventions, we will complement one another. And again, it's also critical for the ELRC PCTA to be for its sustainability, and we are able to generate income as well. We need to provide accredited HIV training for educators as well. Also, we need to contribute towards their continuous professional development for educators. So if we do so, if we do that, we'll be able to deliver these interventions during allocated time for educator development. And again, if we get accredited as well, this will assist getting educators to develop educators professionally to deliver life orientation lessons to learners and personally by promoting behavior change directed at individual educators. So we have applied for funding from Futures Group, which we intend to use to pilot the comprehensive evidence and school-based HIV intervention model in schools in Ngungundlovu district, and targeting educators, school support staff, learners, and parents as primary beneficiaries. So we want to assist with this pilot. We will be able to learn from this pilot and assist the Department of Basic Education to roll out this model if it's an appropriate one to all other districts beyond Ngungundlovu. Thank you, Chair.
Thanks, Chairperson. I'm not going to go through every slide. So, in respect of the teacher laptop initiative, what I can say, and now I'm trying to go quickly to slide that gives the breakdown, is all except the Eastern Cape, all other provinces have made provision for teachers to receive letters, and the rollout in respect of the laptop is including. To date, we have about 140,000 educators who have and will receive letters to be able to enable them to purchase laptops and activate the payment of their allowances. All I can indicate is that, as we indicated to you in March, the government, that's the Department of Basic Education and National Treasury, are busy working together to look at other options of making laptops available as a tool of the teaching profession. To that extent, our minister would make announcements when those approaches are finalized. I just want to show you that slide so you can have the benefit of looking at the provincial distribution. I said about 145, that's approximately 40% of educators. I can announce that Free State may most likely, subject to the availability of the HOD and the MEC on the 29th, be inviting the 4,800 educators to come to a session so that they could purchase laptops where there would be an occasion displayed by all the laptop manufacturers. The next initiative that I will talk about, let me move through, is going to be teacher development. You keep going through. All I want to say in respect of teacher development is that the report has been finalized and published, and acting in terms of that, our minister has had engagement with the trade unions to ensure that they are directly involved in ensuring the professional development of educators. And so many of the recommendations in respect of teacher development are taking effect. The detailed report has been published and can be made available. Can we move on? The next thing we want to talk about is the Quality Teaching and Learning Campaign. The Quality Teaching and Learning Campaign is one in which the ERRC is either the primary or the major funder of. We are a key driver in terms of the project management. We have brought together all stakeholders. Whereas we started off by a discussion just with the Department of Basic Education and teacher unions, today the different types of organizations has widened to include traditional leaders, parents' organizations, learners, NGOs, etc. And further, we've handed to you a blue book. This indicates that arising out of the NEDLAC process, okay, and there's been further developments in respect of the Quality Teaching and Learning Campaign, in which we now bring together the NEDLAC trade unions, Brand South Africa, together to lead a broader partnership for the improvement of quality teaching in our schools. The launch of that took place on the 2nd of October in Butterworth, at the national launch. Starting from the 23rd of October in Gauteng, various provinces will launch, and that program would be accomplished before the end of the financial year. We account for the Quality Teaching and Learning Campaign as we believe it is one of the important programs in terms of our social responsibility as a bargaining council that we can support. Can we move through? What I would want to say in arriving at a conclusion is that the ERRC is an organization in a state of transition. Much of our operations will change significantly to improve our efficiency levels. And I've given some indication. On behalf of our executive committee, the audit committee members, I would like to convey our appreciation to you, members of parliament, for assisting this council to fulfill its responsibility in respect of the oversight for quality and integrity in respect of our accounting, auditing, and reporting practices. We thank you for your valuable time in ensuring that the Council does not waver from its role and to focus on the qualitative aspects of financial reporting to its stakeholders and ultimately to the public. Thank you very much.
Just reach up your microphones, please. These mics. And you want to talk? Thank you. I'd like to thank you for this comprehensive report. It was a very interesting one. And I'm opening the floor now to questions. I'm starting with the Honourable Makubela. Then I'll go to Honourable James. And then I'll do Honorable Smiles, and then it's Honorable Matisha. and Jeff's here. Now I'm just checking. Then last it will be Honorable Dina. Thank you. Honorable Maku, Arak Vashishi, and then last Honorable Dina. And Honorable Hanyaho? All right, thank you. Honorable Dadu? Fine for the moment. All right, thanks. We start with Honorable Maku Vera.
Thanks, Chairperson. Appreciate the report we have just got. But I think the following questions are made. One on the teacher laptop initiative and the percentage there in terms of teachers who qualify, I think it was page 85. I see in some there's no indication, but most of those are high, and for Limpopo there's 1%. Perhaps there's a better explanation as to how the situation is like that.
The teacher development and the formation of the National Voter Committee and its plan, my interest there will be exactly who's leading this, because when we met SAIS the other time, SAIS made an impression that I mentioned about the process. And here you are, you're talking to a senior program, and perhaps you will tell who they are. I'm beginning to think that in education, there are many people who work for their hands on almost everything. So that we need clarity as to who does what at the end, so that there's no duplication, and we know who's responsible. For learning and teaching campaign, I see some provinces, for instance, Northern Cape and another state of Cape, I can clarify that, has included that in its performance indicator. And in our view, this campaign is not taking off ground properly. And if that is part of the performance, I think. Already, there must be issues. Are you able to account for that as to how the process is proceeding? Because you should be in charge of it. The other one related to the community facilitators. I know that, yes, there are quite a number of teachers, including principals, who are not in the area that's employed currently, either they're supporting in psychiatric and so on, and communities do not want them back. But my real question will be, these negotiators, as they negotiate, they are going back or elsewhere for placement, what do they do? Because at the end of the day, that negotiation may not resolve the problem. Or how do you ensure that those problems that were prevalent before, as they come back, they are not back. Otherwise, it means you retain them back to the same environment without being able to resolve the problems that caused their going in the first place. The last but one, provincial ELRC, you think they have standardized them, and our concern is that previous year was their effectiveness and functionality. That standardization may not necessarily translate in them being effective. So still their performance now may need to be accounted for. We can't just say we've standardized and issued this and that as if that on its own tell of their actual effectiveness. And on the, I think, firstly, Chair, let me start here that I want to understand ALRC's role in the main in terms of salaries. But yes, I do have questions. I'm not sure, Chair, if you will allow another. And I wanted that clarity given. I know you have commissioned some study that tells some of the documentation. So this is what happened in terms of salary. But broadly speaking, in Indian society regard our teachers as the lowly or poorly people, regardless of the fact that internationally it may be considered, but still people feel that profession is not really being taken care of, and some opt out of teaching. It's not as attractive as we claim it happens. But having moved from qualification to performance related to OSD, are we able to say most of the challenges that we have been resolved? Or there are still many challenges in that area which may need to be handled. So I think that was probably my last.
Thanks a lot, honourable members. I want to ask you to stop in case you take in other people's questions too. Thank you. Honourable Jane?
Thank you, Chair. I just had a single question. I am not sure the colleagues are able to answer here, but I'd like to know what proportion of your funds do you spend on teacher professional development? I'm not surprised that you're involved in the HIV testing education business. That's at the Department of Health function. I could easily be taken care of there. But I mean, the key thing is, how much of your money are you spending on teacher professional development?
Thank you. Honourable Smart?
Yeah, thank you, Chairperson. Yeah, let me just acknowledge some of the reports that indicated some progress. The decrease in the disputes and those, the basic education partnership, your involvement there, and then also the laptop initiative, what you are doing there, but all of them still needs to bear fruit. It's still, you know, we still have to see what's happening there. But on the other side, I have a question with regard to IQMS. You say there that the reports have been adopted, but now the question is, if adopted, what are you going to do about it? And the adoption is one thing, but the implementation, and make sure that the effects of IQMS really comes alive. Then, with regard to PCTA, 6 million rand to your sub-partners, you need to convince us that that money is well spent. I haven't picked it up in the readings, and how do you hold them accountable for what they are doing? Because it's almost two thirds of the 9 million rent that you give out of your control to other people. My thinking is would rather be maybe you should have done it other way around, but it's just my thinking. So if there's no control over that 6 million, then we've got a major problem, and then it's money spent in vain, and then we will not deal with the HIV/AIDS problem within the teacher, among teachers. QLTC, the Quality Learning and Teaching, and I want to bring this in line with labor peace. You say, as your motto and as your vision, and your core business is quality learning and teaching through labor peace. Am I quoting you correct? Right. Now, if you report that the understanding of the QLTC in provinces are very low, and on that, upon that you are saying there are poor directors from national head office, then something big is wrong. Then we have problems, because there must be understanding of the QLTC, and it cannot be lamented there is poor understanding. We must do something about it. And my question is, what are you doing about it? Because labor peace is what you want. So I would then come back to the labor peace and say, if we have labor peace and we have not received quality learning and teaching, then the labor peace is not productive, I would say. Then it doesn't help us with labor peace, but our children are suffering because of low quality of learning and teaching. Thank you. So you need to explain that, please.
Thanks, Chair, and everyone here. The first thing, I want to welcome the report. Read one has really gone through the entire booklet. One had, you know, a number of questions before we came here. But through the explanations, I think most of those particular questions have been addressed. I remember that when it was established, the ELRC had a narrow view of looking into job losses and the salary negotiations. But the report now shows that that has been broadened. Therefore, Chair, from my side, I want to say that we should actually welcome this. Further, that your resolution, you are referring to the ELRC, to facilitate stability, to ensure non-disruption, ensuring accountability, stability, etc. That is quite good, and it needs to be welcomed. Further, to say that the success regarding HIV AIDS project needs to be welcomed. Again, one has gone through, and I believe many amongst us, the problems that engulf the majority of the teachers, really, educators in the country, because of HIV, AIDS, etc. And further, again, in line with the report, the achievements, the improvement of shop stewards, etc., that we should welcome. My few problems, and I think some have raised that, is that, one, your report that you are faced with a decrease of not only financial income, but also a broad resources gain. That, I think, is a major problem that we face. And therefore, my question, through your chair, is must we continue having 10 offices of this structure? I'm saying 10 offices because you have the national one, and we have 9 others in the country. Every province has an ELRC office. Must we continue to have that? Which then brings about all those numbers of members of staff. Again, I've gone through the report. It shows that about 18 members of staff. And here you're talking about the lack of resources. And I think when they gave the report, they indicated that they may be stable at least for the next coming 3 years. But what then happens beyond that? So my question therefore is, must we have 10 offices or just one center? I mean, it's not only happening in education, in other labor structures. That is the case. Now, in education, that's a major problem. Must that be the case? Or must we have one, which is the center, to which all these resources will go, so that all the kind of challenges which are there can be, you know, dealt with. What further ossifies my point is again in line with the report that we have here before us, the non or bad performance by some of the provincial offices. And some of the provinces, here it is reported, are not doing well. They're not performing properly in the way that they are required to. And we still have got to drive resources to that particular area. I have gone through this, and I understand in any way that in the provincial structures, what we have there will be, you know, grievances put, but the actual work is done at the center. You know? So the dispute, etc. Therefore, must we have the provincial offices? I think that needs to be responded to. Second thing, the improvement of skills. My colleague here has referred to that, but I want to take it further. To say, yes, you're talking about laptops, etc., etc. I wish to believe that it's not only laptops, but then that may not fall maybe within the realm of this structure. And of course, we'll talk about that when we talk to SAFE. But then, yes, you're talking about the skills development. You have referred here to the laptops. Now, you have indicated here that the majority of the teachers or educators will not have that. But they ought to have that by a particular period. That is not okay. Who is responsible? We need to respond to that particular question. Who is responsible? Is it the Department of Education or the ELRC? I'm just throwing for the schools, the provinces, etc. I'm just throwing that so that we then from there can be able to identify where the problem is and then take it forward. You indicate both in the presentation and in the booklet as well that you related to that particular point took a resolution to implement the plan, you know? And then I'm asking, if you said that you will implement, is it you that are saying you're going to purchase this and give the educators, etc., etc., or is it the government, is it the department that has not, you know, implemented? Let's talk about that so that we understand where the problem is and have it corrected. One is not happy, Chair, through you, about the qualification of the finance. I mean, the, it indicates there that the finance, what do you call this thing? The audit. I think we need to look into that. The other thing is, why do we have slow efficiency performance? Last year, and here I can refer you once again to page 32. I've gone through each and every page of your booklet. And I suppose later, if we do have time, we then can be able to go from one to the other. Yes.
Thank you, Honorable Members. I think a very critical part where you say to take lot of years my teacher to reach the top of all the virtues that are there. Then my question would be, do you still maintain it's a good mother in the field? Are we calling that good? Because the real is, we are having teachers who never reach the top or top of the virtues, and it's as if you're just Members have talked about this. When I look at the mandate of the ERC, yet it has been increased. There are a lot of things now that we have to deal with. I know ERC was well known of labor issues, but when you look at the mandates now, I think they've expanded in such a way that we find so many other programs overlapping with other entities or other entities within the Department of Education. Like, for an example, when you talk of teacher development, what is your role in teacher development? We talk of QLTC. Is this your mandate, the full mandate? Or so that we know exactly when we talk of QLTC, that is not too well implemented. We know, we all agree on that one. Even when the department itself has come to present, it's a problem with the clean city, but whom are we going to blame? Is it you, the RC, or the department? Where is it? What is your core mandate? And tell us about these other mandates, that how far do you go with them? Because when you talk of labor, yes, we know that is your role, and we can all say we are doing well on those ones, but come with these other added mandates. Really, even within your reports, you can feel it yourself that you are not doing that much good as per the command that you have as ELRC. There are positions that, in whatever structure, when you talk of those positions, we always believe those are the key positions that will drive whatever structure to do best. But when you look at your executive office, the number of vacancies that you see there, they leave much to be desired. That's to say, are you capable enough to perform the duties that you have? If you can look at that number, about 7 vacancies that are there, and if you look at the rate of it and over, you just begin to wonder why are people leaving LRC so much. I can talk on that one. And I was a little bit threatened when the accounting officer was talking on the cut down of his staff. I don't know whether he was referring to a retrenchment, but I just said I would just throw it in. I'm talking to labor people. We are going to talk about that, but really for me, as a country, we're fighting very much just to say people must be for job creation, and now we're talking of retrenchment. It was a little bit scary. Chair, when it comes to teacher laptops, on teacher laptops that are out, seemingly, yes, there is a problem, even when you read in the newspapers and whatever. And I will just pose my question, even based on what I read on the newspapers. Firstly, the issue of IPESA, as to say, some of the service providers cannot even continue because there is no assurance within the department that teachers will be paid. There is a problem with PESAN. When and how are you going to unblock that so that we see that this roll out, the process is being rolled out? Secondly, we talk of approximately 46% of teachers who are blacklisted and cause the problem. It was one of your presentations that you came up with, and you are reading it around it, or even on the newspaper. And I didn't hear today, how are you going to make sure that all those obstacles are put aside so that we see this roll out? We've been waiting for it for almost 2 years now, but there are these little things that are just blocking it, of which we can be happy if we can see them
being put aside and we say that all out of these laptops. The president has announced them 2 years ago, now it's a little bit of a failure. On your side, if ever we can just fail to run out the laptops. And the whole issue then around, I think 2 weeks ago, there was this around the service providers, is to say that those service providers who are regarded as the service, the first one, how was it put in the paper? The first service provider, but the best awarded, if ever I can put it, then the second one and the second. And I know it's causing a lot of problems, even towards the rolling out of this thing. Can we just expand? Tell us the challenges and how are you going to unblock this operating pressure thing around this issue? Thanks.
Thanks a lot, Honorable Mina. Just around of the question, I'm looking at your audit report, the OGC report, on page 139. The first thing that I have to do, I have to congratulate you on your unqualified report. But there are emphasis on methods. And I'm just looking at that emphasis. When it comes to irregular expenditure, there the AG speaks about 2.5 million. Then on the next page you have purchase and wasting expenditure, which is 116.5952. And further to the irregular expenditure. And then there's also when it comes to, the first one was according to carrying management supply. The other is according to non-attendance and through pre-booked training and meetings, which were approved of the expenditure. Now my question to this, when it comes to fruitless expenditure and wasteful, what has been done since? Because you have to speak to it, that we know exactly what did you do. Then when it comes to your irregular expenditure, that was on the income figures, and then there's also goods and services, as quoted somewhere. I'd like to know from the department, what actions did you take so that it does not reoccur, and was there any disciplinary action to take on it? Thank you. You may answer the question.
Thank you, Chairperson. My team for very good. Let's start off with the fundamental question that was put. I think we share the view of Honorable Member from the DA, who said labor fees without an improvement in the quality of learning outcomes is both barren and futile. Now, and that is then linked to what is the mandate of the Council. In terms of the Labor Relations Act, the Bargaining Council has 12 objectives. Included in those objectives is supposed to be a forum for collective bargaining, the forum in which disputes are resolved, equally the forum that could deal with training and development. That is, it could deal with research, it could deal with submissions, that it could make to NEDLAC, and above all, it's to equally provide support either to the parties or to the industry, in our case, our industry is public education. So the objectives of the Bargaining Council is not just only have a dispute resolution or collective bargaining. Bargaining councils have to make sure that their industry or sector becomes viable for economic growth. In our case, public education needs to deliver fair value. And that fair value is improved learner outcomes. And by Southern African regional standards, we are way below even our neighbors or neighboring countries. So the Bargaining Council can't only narrowly look at dispute resolution, collective bargaining. Collective bargaining must support the improvement of learning outcomes. If we pay teachers more or provide incentives, the purpose of paying teachers more or providing the incentive is to improve the quality of the teaching and thereby the quality of the outcome. That is why we want to reward teachers. Now, I think it was recognized not just that IQLS was beginning to fail the system, not because it was long and lengthy, because it was not achieving the desired results. Learning outcomes were not improving, while teachers were getting satisfactory performance, not at most. So our role in the teacher development summit was to look at process issues and try to identify the key challenges. Once those challenges were identified, we have different roles. States must look at the accreditation of programs related to teacher development. The ERRC must then look at what collective agreement it wants to conclude that begins to address teacher development issues. We've identified about 2 or 3 years. The first being that we have to really think about qualifications of teachers, and that's where the debate comes in. Maybe there should be an agreement reached between the department and the trade union about the quality, which in any case was a subject of discussion in the teacher development summit. The other area is looking at the involvement of trade unions. Our minister has recognized that through international research that we've done in the ERRC, there can be an improvement in learning outcomes if trade unions are also involved in professional development of their members. And that's where our minister has taken the bold step of trying to use teacher trade unions as agents of service provided amongst the many that are. But SAIS is never a service provider. It is the accreditation agency. It facilitates the development of programs, and it itself, I know, runs some of the programs. Whereas the ERRC will not run programs, and therefore we have not spent any money on a professional development program for teachers. But we would be willing to receive monies from foreign donors, wherever, to allocate to trade unions and the department to be able to use for professional development. We bring together the two most important players in public education, the provincial and national departments of education and the trade unions. At the core of any quality teaching and learning campaign, no matter what parents do or pupils do, if the departmental official and the teachers don't make a change, there won't be an improvement in quality teaching and learning. That's why at the ERRC, we are an appropriate forum, but we are limited. If we only have to look at teachers and the department, then we remain in the ERRC. But the QLTC has grown bigger than the ERRC. Our DG is the chairperson. All heads of provincial departments participate. Our minister drives that to the CEF. Okay? So all our role is to participate at the ERRC, to fund where we can, and make sure the QLTC is a viable department. But we are not the QLTC at the ERRC. We are merely one partner. But if others fail to fund it, then we look at funding it, because we know that in order to turn the system, somebody has to take the initiative and bring it together. That's what we have done. So we are no longer the QLTC, but we account for it because we spend money on it. And we use our money. And I think we would be required to play a central role in the QLTC, not as the primary organization, but as a support organization, to make sure that that campaign is deepened and does reach the district level. So I thought I would answer it in that way. If we look at it, I think we share the concerns that have been raised about the poor performance or sometimes non-performance of our provincial team. We ourselves as the secretariat and the senior management and the council officer, we put a proposal that we don't have to retrench, but certainly we can no longer justify 9 offices, pay rent, we use space. What we have been doing over time, when Professor Maya Tura was the chairperson of the council, about 3-4 years ago, it was raised that space, ERRC and EDDP share facilities. Unfortunately, we pursued those discussions and it did not materialize with the others. What we have been doing is where we can get free departmental premises like in KZN, then we take up that space. But we cannot justify even the continued employment of people when it is not material. So, as and when people leave, that's our proposal, is that we don't fill those spots. Or if they can be transferred to the National ERRC, then we do that. Many of our employees have been teachers themselves, who can perhaps be given promotion opportunities, etc., in provincial departments. But as a board member, we certainly do not envisage or contribute to change anyway. But the reality is that we have accepted that we cannot continue to perform poorly or not to perform as we currently are in our world. Something has to change dramatically. That's where we are at in terms of our proposal that we're taking to our executive committee. And hopefully, we do not make the decision, hopefully they will apply their minds and see wisdom in us trying to cut back. When the CFO looked at the staff expenditure, 18 people is quite significant. That's almost a little less than half of our total staff complement. That's one. But two, in terms of our operating expenditure, in support, the 9 rentals, etc., that are associated are quite significant. That in itself. We don't fill in post because it exists on the calendar, and maybe that's something we'll have to review. We had an idea we would do that, but I think our growth must be measured by how we increase the services that we have. So as an organization, those are the areas. In respect to the teacher laptop, I think clearly there has been a lot of mischief making in the newspapers to a large extent about what some people want. Clearly, the ERRC has specific functions to perform in respect of Government Gazette 32207. Up to today, we cannot ascertain a source that will tell us how many percent of teachers are there. People only guess. So we cannot, as the ERRC, continue to talk about blacklist teachers if we are unable to identify a percentage. It may exist, and all of us may be aware that it exists. How big it is, we cannot quantify. What we do know is that, based on that, if we do not find other models, and that's why the Departments of Basic Education and National Treasury are working to see how best government itself can take a more increased responsibility to provide the laptop. We do accept that the POPO is low, but it is that provincial government and ultimately that provincial department that gives us the figure. We as the ERRC cannot instruct or advise them to do so. They will do so based on reasons of what is available to them and what they can afford at this current point. Okay. You will realize that in Mpumalanga, North West, and KZN seem to be 3 provinces that are rolling out almost to all the educators. But it's very different in other provinces. So we, as the people that are project managing, do not influence or get involved in the decision making of provinces. So we perhaps that's something that our minister can pursue any further discussions at the level of the CEM in that respect. But the one thing that is the laptop initiative is rolling out and that we hope teachers to benefit. We always knew government was going to roll it out in 3 tranches that we don't agree. It could never do so in a single year. If there are funds available, it may do so, but that only our minister would know and announce at an appropriate time. I think in respect of community facilitators, there are a number of problems, but critical is that at this point, when we call what's called displaced educators, the two provinces that seem to have this phenomenon is KwaZulu-Natal and the Eastern Cape. It occurs in other provinces, but it's not dealt with as displaced educators. They are ones and twos, and they are managed effectively. But where they may exist and is brought to our attention, we'll be proactive in order to try and assist. The one area where we cannot resolve issues is where there have been allegations of theft and fraud. And in that case, those hearings must be accomplished first. We wouldn't want to take somebody who ultimately is formed guilty and transfer that burden to another school. So we are quite careful under those circumstances. The other is that where appeals are sitting with the MECs, then we are advising the MECs to dispose of that matter urgently and not drag it on. Either the MEC accepts the plea that is being made or it rejects it. We cannot see value in that appeal sitting longer than a month or two. Currently, some appeals sit for over a year or two. And that's where the complications are. So, we will, it's a new area we are going into, we will develop. And learn a lot as we get into it. I think we've said a lot. In terms of salary research, I think what we, I'm going to get Cindy to answer, but while she's thinking, the CFO is going to answer the questions related to the findings by the Auditor General.
Thank you. Sir?
Thank you. Thank you, Jim. Let me start with fruitless and wasteful. I think the bulk of that, I think 95%, it indicated that is incurred by parties to council. It's not incurred by employees of the council. That is, parties to council is either the trade unions or the employer. So there is really nothing that the hierarchy can take action against. This is a requirement that we need to report to wasteful and fruitless expenditure. So we also do report it on a quarterly basis, and the executive committee is aware and is trying to take steps to ensure how it can best minimize, because some of the issues behind the non-attendance is outside even the control of those members of delegates. Because they've got also their own principles. So, however, I just needed to indicate that there is nothing really that we as the ERC can do, because those are not our principles. Now, turning to the bigger picture on the irregular expenditure, no steps have been taken. However, after the end of the financial year, the submission was done to the executive. And that was approved. Thank you.
Let me add, this was an expenditure we had to incur related to our mandatory requirement by the Registrar of Labour to determine how many lecturers exist in the FETC sector. Now, the envisaged cost was supposed to be about between 200,000 to 400,000. However, when colleges, there are 50 of them, with many campuses, did not cooperate and provide, we then had to send the auditor out into the field to physically go and verify. As we are here today, our senior manager, corporate services, and somebody from collective bargaining are addressing the college council chairperson on their payment of levies. Now, this is a sector where we have significant problems. And ultimately, the cost escalated to over 900,000. When the Auditor General says it's irregular, is that we did as this, as the accounting officer, I did not go to the executive committee and ask that that be ratified and accepted. It's not, therefore, no disciplinary action is required, Chairperson, because we were compelled by law to perform that audit. Okay. When the CFO puts income verification as a challenge, that's the issue that we have. So when you are establishing even a bargaining unit for basic the ABET sector, we'll have the same challenge of having to verify how many educators there are and which unions they belong to. That's called union density. Based on that, then the Registrar of Labour decides whether we can establish a bargaining unit or not. To do that, the NRA requires at least there must be more than 50% of the employers and 50% of the employees in that sector. And the finding of the in the APTC sector, it's just over 50% only belong to me. There's approximately 40 some odd that do not belong to any union. So that's a touch and go. That's what that survey had to do. So I thought I'd clarify that, right?
Thank you, Chair. Honorable members, responding to the controls within the project, the ELRC is the prime contractor with CDC. There are set rules and regulations that we have to comply with. So which means as PCTA at ELRC, we control the funding. So the funding is not dispersed to partners once off. The funding is dispersed quarterly to the partners. That is based on the quarterly plans that they submit to us, which as the Secretariat, we evaluate those plans. And also when we evaluate those plans, we also look at the report of the previous quarter, and that is tied to their performance agreements which they sign when we make awards to sub-partners. And again, the performance of sub-partners as well is also reviewed by the governance committee as well in terms of their outputs in relation to the sub-agreements that they have signed. So to make sure that when we disperse funding, actually they are actually performing according to their commitment or their sub-agreement. Thank you, Chairperson.
What I can add is the U.S. government rules are more stringent than our PFNA. To put it simply, a union can ask for more money if it hasn't accounted for the money that was given to it in the first instance. And so, unlike ourselves, we may give quarterly reports, but spending for the next quarter is not dependent on the ERC for accounting for the previous quarter. So it's fairly tight. And there's a special audit that is performed. We can provide you a copy of that report from PricewaterhouseCoopers. Okay. So no union can use funds for anything other than the purpose for which it has been identified. They open special accounts and operate that separately. And that's how we manage to keep that under control. Collective bargaining issues, Cindy?
Thanks,
Jess.
I think the members will recall that one of the overriding objectives of establishing the framework for the OSD for educators was to ensure that educators get paid up to the highest level whilst they are still kept in the classroom. They don't get tempted to apply for managerial positions. Now, what the recommendations from the research is highlighting is that certain principles of that framework which could have addressed this problem of slow progression of educators within the salary ranges were not implemented. For instance, there was the principle of accelerated progression, wherein educators at the post level one could have moved through three to the maximum of six notches, which then is actually expediting the movement between the salary ranges. That principle, what the research is highlighting is that principle was dropped off. It was never implemented. Therefore, council should go back and reconsider implementing that principle. That is principle number one. Principle number two, to assist in the expedition of the movement within the salary notches, is wherein those, based on experience, those who have been there in the system and who have developed specific skills or certain skills, they can then be promoted to TLS, that is a special, FTLS, that is specialist within the teaching and learning. In other words, you don't take that person and allow the person to go and apply for to be the principal. If a person has been there and they've accumulated quite a number of experience in this particular field, then there can be such establishment of positions so that that is addressed. Then, Chair, in terms of the IQMS, the Honourable Member made reference to the plans that have been adopted. I think what we wanted to highlight was that there has been engagement at the level of the TASIN in terms of refining the document in relation to that summit declaration and streamlining IQMS. Now, that process has resulted into draft collective agreement. Now, in committing to achieving that objective within this current financial year, what has been adopted by Council is the management plan, with the 30th of November as the deadline. But there is a product that is currently being considered by different stakeholders in terms of seeking mandates on what is there as the outcome of the negotiation process, which has a specific deadline which all parties have committed to. And then, Shepherdson, lastly, I want to support what the GS had alluded to earlier on as the senior manager for collective bargaining. Indeed, we have prepared a proposal that talks to the council relooking at the organizational redesign so that the issue of having 10 offices providing collective bargaining services is reviewed. So I just wanted to confirm that.
I think just to add, chambers will remain, but they don't need full-time personnel. And the way other bargaining councils function, I think, has given us a good benchmark on how to organize ourselves. Mm-hmm. The rest of the public service are serviced from the center to the bargaining council that exists in departments or in the provinces. In respect of IQMS and the performance agreements, there are two draft collective agreements on the table. So it's not that they still have to do it. As the senior manager indicated, it is in the final stages. Our parties understand that there is an urgency to deliver. And they know the consequences of not delivering on those two. And so I think that will in itself get them to deliver on something they have delayed perhaps for quite some time. That's the impatience that exists in the public about those delivery areas. The ERC no longer negotiates salary increases. That takes place in the PFCPC. But what we can do in the ERC is work within the framework of any agreement reached in the PFCPC to devise measures and incentives appropriate for teachers. At the PSCBC level, they acknowledge that you need different salary and reward dispensations for different key sectors. Teaching as a sector has to have things unique so that it addresses the needs of teaching as a sector. And so we have to be brave enough to take forward what that means and be able to fashion a system for teachers that can ensure they function effectively. And that's the new area that we're going into. And what that means, I think, parties will then understand. I think we've covered most questions generally. We do want to answer them in specific to each person, but rather cover all the issues. If we have missed out something, I do apologize. You may draw our attention.
I think we'll all come to the end of the meeting, and if there are any more questions, you know, let us make a note and give it to the secretary.
and the supplicant is to the ELRC, which I think was a very good interaction from members with the council. Are there anything that you'd like to say, sir? Before we close the meeting, then the department, the international department, will be given the last word, and then I'll be closing the meeting.
Thank you. As the accounting office and the management, I think we ought to hand over to our chairperson to do a vote of thanks.
Thanks, the chairperson.
Thank you, Chair. To all our members, we thank you very much for your attention and the engagement that you have given on us. I must indicate that the questions that we posed here are giving us much of a thought so that we are able to do the work as expected as the ELRC. Because I had a sense that some questions are indicating that we might be taking too much than we can chew. And as a result, that's why we have a lot of overlap in terms of programs that are done by the ELRC and other partners in education. We thank you very much for your engagement and the promise that we work on your consent, so that next year when we come here, we have improved as content.
Thank you, Department, Ms. Simon.
Thank you, Chief. That was my mother's maiden name. I know you are confusing me. Mine is Gaia. The chairperson knows my mother really well, so she's working on my mother's surname. Chair, I would just like to say that I think there has been a very rigorous discussion around the teacher laptop initiative. And although the question proposed a lot of them to the ELRC, which I think they have answered very well, a lot of it I think we have to indicate to the committee members, all of you need to understand that the mischief making in the newspaper has done a lot of harm to the image of the profession. And the main issue that we've tried to unpack and cover in all of it, in all the stories around the bad debt of teachers, is actually nothing to do with bad debt, but the whole way in which the new Finance Credit Act profiles any South African citizen these days. And so it is very difficult for people just to go out and purchase like they used to do before, because the banks profile you, and that does make it difficult for banks need to provide the funding without any set guarantees from the state. For that reason, we have discussed with National Treasury that there is a need now for us to reconceptualize the way in which we actually engage with this particular project. It is intended to be a tool of the trade. It is required for teachers for a range of reasons, not only for classroom practice, but also for their own personal development in terms of the development programs that they are required to go on. And therefore, we are looking at rather than the teacher purchasing it and that it is an asset of the teacher, we rather look at it as like, you know, you provide chalk in the classroom, maybe the state needs to also provide in this day and age a laptop for the teacher. So we are just changing the way in which we actually procure it, and instead of the teacher buying it, the state buys it for the teacher. And that's the process that we're in discussion with National Treasury. And that's the report that you will get in our discussions internally with you as a committee. You will get that feedback from us as well as our minister to pronounce and continue. Thank you very much.
Before you have Professor Ms. Gaia, because I would like to say anything on the closing remark. I think what's important is for us to, as a committee, to express our satisfaction with the good planning and the contribution we're making to public education in South Africa through providing of student resolution services. And I think what was notable to me was the following success, which indicated a decrease in the number of litigation and appeals.
2 to 3, which could be contributed to the improved quality control exercise by the Labor Relations Council. There were others too that I could speak to, but on a lighter note, I think certain members, yes, opposition, took a few over, thinking they are the chairperson. Very welcome. So, then, you know, that was good. Yes, it was. I won't mention names. I don't give you credit for that. I'll give you credit by just saying it generally. Then I think what is important is to congratulate you on your unqualified report. And I would have liked you to improve on it, because Umalusi came here with an unqualified report with no emphasis on matters. So that is a clean report. And I think you are going to struggle to get it. Because you spoke about, you know, when it comes to fruitless expenditure and fruitless and wasteful, and even irregular, you spoke to unintended consequences. But then, when a person speaks to something that's unintended, then my question is your risk management. What risk management policy or strategy do you have in place? Because there should be a risk management plan. And then also, like, even if the AG, when they congratulate you on the unqualified report, then they speak to the general recognized accounting practices, and then they also speak to the PFMA. But remember, there are internal controls too that they speak to in the PFMA. And you can be floating, even if the agency is your way. Because even when it comes to procurement bidding, you're still within the PFMA. So I think you have to put something into place that will help you when it comes to that, that you can keep that unqualified report with no emphasis. And then I'd like you to carry on with the good work in fulfilling your vision. I hope to improve the quality of teaching and learning through labor free closed quotes. I think your vision is very interesting. And as a committee, we'd like to thank you for your presentation. I thank you and close your meeting.